This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles. How is this voice? Wow, I'm sick and I'm loving it. Yeah, wow. And I don't even have Carrie here today to take care of me. She usually can talk when I'm not. But I want to say that I'm here to be the managing partner of your life, as I am every week right here on Gervie's Law. Carrie is out of town. She was in South Africa. Now she's in Washington, D.C., meeting with the Bushes. And I'm not sure what that's all about, but next week we will find out. So I'm flying solo, hoarse as I am. I'm a little hoarse. Nay, nay. Okay, if I cough, just forgive me. But we have a great show. I'm so excited. Do I often get this excited? Yes, I do. Carrie, if you were here, Carrie Kasem, she would say you are so excited every show, Alan. And I am, because we have a great show and I want to get right to it. Later on in the show, we are going to have Aaron Cohn, who is the counterterrorist expert in this country, in Israel, in every country in the world. He wrote the book on counterterrorism called Brotherhood of Warriors. It's a great, great read. It's going to be in Rambo 5 with Sylvester Stallone. And in fact, he's been on Fox News so many times that he even knows our first guest, Gretchen Carlson, because he's been interviewed by her a number of times. So we're looking forward to having Aaron on the show. He's here in studio, smiling at me right now. But before we get to Aaron, we've got some important business to talk about, because I'm telling you, it's very infrequent that I actually look forward to watching a television show, a documentary specifically, and I'm really looking forward to Monday night, because this is a show that no one should miss. It's very important. It's called Gretchen Carlson, Breaking the Silence. It's premiering on Lifetime, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and we are really privileged to have with us New York Times best-selling author for Be Fierce and Getting Real. She is an accomplished violinist of all things, 1989 Miss America, Stanford grad, was a co-host on the Saturday Early Show on CBS, and of course on Fox and Fox and Friends. She's paved the way for the Me Too movement. A lot of people don't realize that she's behind everything, has been so instrumental in so many women's lives. She's the American television commentator and award-winning journalist and women's advocate, Gretchen Carlson. Welcome to Gervie's Law.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Happy Saturday. I'm sorry you're not feeling well. I just got over exactly what you have. I think it's running rampant across the country, because I'm all the way on the East Coast. Yeah, sorry about that.
You sound so much better than I do, so I'm looking forward to maybe sounding like you. It's interesting, because I want to sound like you, just like when you talked about Nicole Kidman playing you, saying, oh, you two are dead ringers, 6 feet tall versus 5'3". I'm going to sound like Gretchen Carlson.
See? Yeah, well, I've joked that on the red carpet I'll have to wear stilts when that movie comes out. But
do you have any idea when it's coming out, Gretchen?
No, the first actual, there's a couple projects in the works on the story about what happened at Fox News. The first one is going to be a Showtime miniseries, and I believe that's coming out in June or July. I think it's 8 parts, and then the major motion picture, I think, will be after that.
Okay, we're going to talk about that, because, of course, this is all stemming from the 2016 sexual harassment lawsuit against Roger Ailes, the former founder, chairman, and CEO of Fox News. I got to ask you something, Gretchen. We have Gloria Allred on our show all the time, Lisa Bloom. They're always talking about their advocacy for victims of sexual harassment in the workplace. We had Kristen Gibbons Fedden on our show, who was the prosecutor in the Bill Cosby case. She came on the show right after she had given closing argument in the Bill Cosby case. All these women get paid to advocate on behalf of sexual harassment victims. That's their job. They're lawyers. And you're not a lawyer, yet you're right out front advocating for women. Why?
Well, interesting tidbit and fact trivia here that I actually took the LSATs. So I was on my way to being a lawyer. Yeah, that's always been in the back of my mind that when I really want to bug my husband, I say, hey, do you think I have time to go to law school at night? But I really would like to get the education still, but I got sidetracked from the whole Miss America thing and then ended up getting into journalism. But I have, you know, I have a love for the law, and over the last couple of years, I've really been immersed in the law with regard to harassment especially, and then more specifically in forced arbitration clauses, which are prevalent now in employee contracts, which keep issues like sexual harassment secret. And so I introduced a bill about a year ago on the Hill to try and get those out of employment contracts, specifically for the issue of harassment, because in that way we can really open up the dialogue and not have women, you know, when they go to complain to HR, immediately be thrown into this secret chamber where you never hear from them ever again. And plus, you never talk about this problem to ever really get to the root of how to fix it. So I really, I've kind of worn a legal hat a lot, and my best friends are lawyers right now after everything that I've been through. So I have great appreciation for people like yourself who have that degree.
You know, it's interesting because Gloria Allred has talked about that on our show, the forced arbitration clauses, and she actually understands why they are in place. And not that she agrees, and I think she full-heartedly believes in what you just said, but she said some of these women really want the protection of confidentiality, and they don't want to be out there because of the repercussions.
Well, and so what my bill does, the Ending Forced Arbitration Act of Sexual Harassment, is give women a choice. It doesn't mandate that you have to go to an open court system if you happen to face this at work. It gives you the choice.
Right.
Because you see what happens when you actually open it up to choice, like so many other things in life.
Right.
The perpetrator may actually think twice before they actually do the action then, right? Because if they know that you can't be immediately sheltered into secrecy, maybe they'll act differently. So it really changes the dynamic within the workforce, and that's why I've been, you know, so hard working against it.
I think it's so important, and you make a good point about choice, because it's so difficult on so many women. I want to tell you a quick story about when I was a young lawyer, and I think it fits into Breaking the Silence, which is premiering on Monday night, when you talk about every woman's story. So I was a young lawyer, and I was representing a young 25-year-old teacher, and she was from the Midwest, and she was sexually assaulted in the custodian's room by the custodian. And in the deposition, it was one of my first depositions, I was up against a white-haired 65-year-old man, and he started asking her questions about having sex with a Hispanic man, and that she, weren't you interested in seeing what it was like to have sex with a Hispanic man? You wanted this, you wanted to be with him. I was outraged. Even as a young lawyer, I stood up and I said, you are a ridiculous human being, and I don't know if you have a daughter or not, but I am not going to sit here anymore. And we stood up and left the room. And the sad part of the story is that she disappeared. She was so upset and distraught about what happened there that she didn't pursue her case, and I never was able to get justice for her, and it always has broken my heart. Gretchen,
I'm so sorry to hear that. Thank you for standing up for her. But that, see, that is exactly what's wrong in our society about the way we approach this issue, is that we trash the women from the get-go. That they finally have the courage to do the right thing and go to tell the authorities or go to HR and complain about their toxic work environment. And guess what? It's their fault. And they're the slut. And they're the one who's done something wrong, right? And it's just reprehensible that that's the way in the courtroom that these things actually work out. It's like, well, how can we try to get as much dirt as we possibly can on everything this woman has ever done in her life, which, by the way, has nothing to do with what actually happened to her in the workplace.
Right, exactly.
Now, my greatest hope is that we're moving in the right direction over the last 2 years, that we have made great strides and that we have given America a conscience about this issue. And one of the reasons that I feel that America really cares more about this issue now is because when they started hearing about these explosive allegations, not only from my case, but from the Harvey Weinstein case and so many others, I think they felt like they had been fooled for a long time because they hadn't been hearing about these cases.
Right.
They were like, what? This is still going on in the 21st century? I mean, it's kind of ridiculous behavior. Well, the reason they weren't hearing about it is exactly what we were just talking about, because these cases are either settled secretly in settlement documents, right? So the woman can never tell you what happened. Or they go to this arbitration, which we were talking about. Again, the woman can never tell you. So I think that it's one of the really big reasons why this entire movement has continued on.
You know,
but with regard to my doc, what I really wanted to do was focus on the every woman story that you just mentioned, like the woman that you represented, because these are the stories that haven't been seen necessarily on the national scene.
And Gretchen,
and
I want to ask...
This issue is...
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you
I was just going to say this...
you go first.
Sorry. No, I was just going to say that you know, so much of this has been thought that it's only, you know, well-known journalists or famous Hollywood actresses, and it's so pervasive in so many other levels and so many other professions. And so I really wanted to travel the country and introduce America to the fast food worker and to the fire chief and to the woman who works at a Veterans Affairs Department and to another journalist actually right out with you in California. It's a pretty well-known case out there. She worked for a Hispanic TV station.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be able to showcase these stories that haven't been in the national spotlight to show America that this is everywhere. And then the second part of the documentary, I'm jumping out a lot of the cars to try and get answers from people. So I'm trying to find accountability for these young women because they haven't been able to get it.
You know, there is a distinction, though, when you talk about your allegations against Roger Ailes. You were a very powerful woman. You were at the time. And it had a lot of credibility, what you were saying. How do you distinguish between these women who you're talking to in the Breaking the Silence documentary who may not have your power or may not have the credibility that you certainly had when you went after Roger Ailes?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. However, I will remind you that I was also trashed. I mean, so, you know, getting trashed just because you have a high-level job and you happen to be a national journalist doesn't mean that people aren't going to come after you. And that's one thing that I think's actually changed for the positive over the last 2 years. Even with high-profile cases, you're seeing that, you know, sometimes the woman's like automatically almost believed now in these cases. That was never happening, even when my story came forward. So, you know, it's not like I filed my case and everyone at my place of work and around the country went, oh my gosh, we believe her. I don't think so at all. So,
but they got rid of Roger pretty quickly after the investigation. So there must have been something there.
Well, yeah, but there actually was an investigation. How would I have ever known that was going to happen?
Right.
I had no way of knowing that was going to happen. But just to your point about the differences, this is exactly why I wanted to do this doc, because I wanted to showcase these women to give them a chance to have their stories heard. And three of these workers that we focus on, who are fast food workers at McDonald's, they actually have had two other national organizations that have also tried to help them, Fight for 15, and also the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund is helping to pay for their legal fees. So, you know, they have had the opportunity since this movement started, by the way, to link to these other national organizations that are helping to fund them, because they certainly don't have the resources to be able to do it on their own.
You know, you talk about the empowerment of women, and this is something that will, I believe, empower people who are working at McDonald's or working at a fast food place, another job in a factory, empower people, women specifically, to speak out. We have to take a quick break, Gretchen. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Girls, we run this mother. Yeah. Girls, we run this mother.
Yeah. All right.
Girls, we run this mother.
Not sure what that has to do with women's rights, but, you know, it's a woman singing. Yeah. Girls run the world. There you go. Is that Beyonce? Nice. I can't believe I did that. Got it. Thank you. I'm here by myself. Carrie would be talking smack with me right now with my music knowledge, because she used to be on a show called, Sixth Sense with Nikki Six. She knows everything about music. I'm just trying to hang in there. We're talking to Gretchen Carlson. The documentary is Breaking the Silence, and it's premiering on Monday night at 8 p.m. on Lifetime. Now, Gretchen, is this a part of a 3-documentary series that you're going to do? And if so, and I believe it is, what do you have in mind moving forward?
Well, thank you so much for having me on the program again and talking about this Lifetime special that I think is really going to be groundbreaking. So when Lifetime came to me last spring, they wanted to do a production deal with me, and so I signed on to do 3 documentaries for them. This is the first documentary. There will be 2 that will follow. We're just brainstorming right now on ideas, so it may or may not be on this issue. I'm not exactly sure yet, but once this airs on Monday night, we'll be moving fast ahead to get those in the works as well.
Well, that'll be exciting, I'm sure. Now, there are a number of other projects on this subject, specifically involving you and involving Roger Ailes. One had already come out, I believe, Divide and Conquer. Wasn't that last month, the story of Roger Ailes? You remember that one?
Yes, that was a 2-hour documentary that I think it had a limited release in theaters as well. Yes, and then there are 2 other projects, as I mentioned, the Showtime miniseries and then the major motion picture. But here's the frustrating part of those projects is that, and this is another problem with settlements and the way we choose to resolve harassment cases in our country, is that I can have nothing to do with these projects. So because of my settlement, I had to sign on the dotted line that I cannot profit from or even consult on for free any kind of motion picture or television special or documentary about my own personal story of what happened to me at Fox. So the best I can hope for in these projects is that they've read every single account and that they've done a bunch of research so that they will, you know, portray my life, at least what happened to me there, in an accurate way.
So that's got to be frustrating, but it really does beg the question, when you're negotiating these settlements, and I'm not going to ask you the substance of it, of course, but can't you put in there, or can't you have your attorney or whoever's negotiating on your behalf talk about, hey, we need to make sure the truth comes out, and I don't want to be silenced by, you know, Hollywood, when we have Nicole Kidman and you have John Lithgow, you have Ashley Greene and Charlize Theron playing Nicole Kidman playing you and playing the others, Megyn Kelly for Charlize Theron. Why shouldn't you be able to make sure that it's accurate, and why can't you put that in the resolution agreement, the settlement agreement?
I know, it's a great point. Listen, as we continue to move forward in this cultural revolution, maybe we'll be able to get more leeway in these settlement documents. But let me tell you something, I got something in my settlement that nobody hardly ever gets, which is I also got a public apology. You know, usually when they're going to, you know, usually in these cases when they're going to pay you essentially for the work that you can't do anymore at the place where you're working for doing nothing wrong. So when they're going to pay you, they're basically paying you for your silence, which is a huge problem with this issue. It's why we haven't resolved this issue in our culture, because all we do is secretly, you know, sign on the dotted line, and then women can no longer talk about what happened. So not only did I get a public apology, which was incredibly important to me, but number 2, I was given the right to be able to talk about this issue as much as I have over the last 2.5 years. I mean, I've been, as I said, introducing legislation. I've been on a college campus tour. I've written the book Be Fierce. I've been on a speaking circuit. I've been doing a tremendous amount of work on this issue. So we were able to carve that out, and most importantly, the apology, because let me tell you something, every single woman that I've ever spoke to about this issue who's gone through it, and the 6 women that I feature in this documentary, the only thing they care about is getting an apology.
Absolutely.
And most of the time, the women never get it, because what does an apology mean? Typically, it means that the person was right.
That's right, and that it happened.
You know, you know, exactly, and companies don't want to do that when they're giving you a settlement. So yes, it would have been great to also carve out that I could take part in my life story in these. But, you know, at that point in time, too, I had no way of knowing that that it was going to develop into this whole cultural revolution and that there would actually be TV shows or movies coming out. So, you know, again, it's frustrating, but I just hope it's accurate.
You make such a good point because I represent a number of women in workers' compensation claims who have suffered, unfortunately, harassment on the job, sexual harassment and otherwise by superiors, sometimes by colleagues. And there really is a feeling they're not necessarily in it for the money. Yes, you know, it's in the media. You made $20 million on the settlement. That's not what it's about to the women, at least I'm sure for you and the women that I represent. They're always concerned about people believing them and knowing that this happened and what they went through. It's a cathartic experience. And that's why when you go out on your tour and you have, I know you're going to be in Dallas on January 26th, Minneapolis, February 23rd, Cincinnati, March 30th, and Phoenix, May 11th. When you go out and talk to people, they all want to feel like they are vindicated, that this happened. How do you get that across when you speak to these people and when you're out in the media?
Yeah, I mean, it's just my greatest hope that more women can get these apologies as we continue to be more, awakened into what this issue is all about. But unfortunately, there's at least one woman that it's heartbreaking in the documentary that you'll see on Monday night where she just sobs to me that's all she wants, you know, because you go through hell for all these years. And the retaliation, by the way, is much worse than the actual sexual harassment in most cases. And you every day go into work and you're just wanting to, you know, die. And all you want is being vindicated. And when that doesn't happen, you know, it's really hard to get past it. And by the way, I also want to mention that I have also established the Gift of Courage Fund and the Gretchen Carlson Leadership Initiative, which you just announced, which is where a ton of my money went into this fund that I created so that I could help other women. So I just want to make sure that I say that.
And
well,
also, I think you should make it,
to give back.
Gretchen, you should make it clear that the profits from Be Fierce go to the Gift of Courage Fund. So this is not something that you're doing for the money. You're doing it because you can help others.
Exactly, and the Gretchen Carlson Leadership Initiative is a 9-city tour of workshops for free for underserved women to be able to come and learn more about this issue, which is something that was really important to me. Again, it brings us back to the every woman's story of, you know, how could I help these women who had nowhere else to go?
Gretchen, you know, we talk about other women. Let's just talk, and we only have a minute or two left. Your situation now, have you been able to kind of have any resolution with the Roger Ailes situation? Obviously, he passed away in May of 2017. How do you think about it now after a couple years have passed?
I don't really want to think about it, to be honest with you. There's a tremendous amount of PTSD that comes with having experienced these types of things, and so I am putting all my efforts into just moving forward with my life. So I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it at all.
You know, I think that's so important for so many people to be able to move forward, and that's something that happens when you can't. You get bogged down, and the stress and the psychology of the whole thing just gets the better of you. And I'm really curious to see when we watch the Lifetime documentary, how the every woman, as you call it, how they seem to get beyond their own experiences. Did you see a difference, or were you able to help people? How do people move forward?
Great question. Thank you for asking that. What you will see in the documentary are these raw, emotional, heartbreaking, explosive allegation stories from these 6 women. I traveled the entire summer all across the country to meet these women. But here's the interesting thing. We go back and we revisit them in the fall several times, and you see the transformation of these women as they gain confidence from coming forward initially scared for their lives, but after they come forward and after they tell their story to me, we then follow them and they gain confidence as they band together and they start going out and helping others themselves. These fast food workers at McDonald's now are providing training sessions for other fast food workers to be able to feel the confidence to come forward. And you see this amazing confidence transformation in these women throughout the documentary.
It's so important.
See me trying to get answers for them. It is. It's so important. And it's, you know, I don't think any of these women in their young 20s ever imagined that they would be facing this allegedly on their first jobs, trying to support their entire family. But now they could have never imagined that they'd become activists either. And there they are. They found a whole new course in life.
You talk about confidence, and you have two kids, Kai and Christian, who are in their teens. Don't you get worried with the social media and what they have exposure to? How are we going to make better people, specifically boys, as they get older, mm-hmm. so people treat people better in the workforce in years subsequent to their schooling?
I know. As much as I do not like social media for my kids, it's actually been a real benefit for this whole Me Too movement, because it's given people the ability to come forward either anonymously or put their name and face on and really just explode this movement. But, you know, here's the thing. You hit on a great point. Really what I've learned over the last 2.5 years is that we do a great job empowering girls in our society, but we need to spend more time on our boys, to be honest with you. We need to really teach our boys how to respect women from an early point in their lives, so that when they get into the workplace, they treat their female colleagues in the same way that they might think about treating their moms. And that is essential. If I could spend most of my days speaking at boys' schools and only talking to boys, I think it would be extremely beneficial to the movement. Oftentimes we think of this only as a woman's issue, but to be honest with you, harassment for the most part is a man's issue.
Yeah.
And so we need to refocus on how we approach this. And also, I just love to say that we need men to help us.
Gretchen.
This is not about bashing men. We just need men to help us.
Gretchen, you and I just came up with your second documentary. You need to focus on the boys, and as they develop into men, that's where we need to go, because this story is every woman's story on Monday night. The next one, I want you to go after these boys and straighten them out, so we're going to have a better society in the future. The documentary is called Gretchen Carlson Breaking the Silence. It premieres on Monday night. This Monday night on Lifetime. And the website, it's a great website. Check it out, GretchenCarlson.com, GretchenCarlson.com. Gretchen, I really want to thank you for being on Gervie's Law today.
Thank you so much for having me and for promoting this doc. It's really, real important, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
We're really looking forward to it. All right, have a great day, Gretchen, but we're not through here. We've got Aaron Cohn. He is ready. He looks great. He's strong, and we're going to hear about counterterrorism, Rambo, and the Brotherhood of Warriors. Right after this break, you're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah. Nice. Is this Beyonce? That's what I thought. Nice, Beyonce. Carrie would tell me it isn't. I don't know why you didn't play Hatikva. You know what that is? Jose, come on. You got to get up on your Israeli national anthems. Wow, that was exciting with Gretchen. And it's even more exciting sitting here right now with Aaron Cohn. I feel so protected. He is the counter-terrorist specialist in the world. I don't think there's anyone greater. And this book is really something. If you haven't read it, you really need to read it. It's called Brotherhood of Warriors. It has a really long title, but I'm just going to say Brotherhood of Warriors. Well, I'll include everything. Behind Enemy Lines with a Commando in one of the world's most elite counterterrorism units. And it's written with best-selling author Douglas Sentry. I just want to read someone. I don't know this person. I didn't pay him to say anything, but this is what he writes. Israeli-style tactics are the only proven method to successfully deal with terrorists on a tactical level. I couldn't put this book down the minute I started reading it. The book is written from a pragmatist point of view, so there's no propaganda here, or at least I didn't perceive any. The author's life seems so exciting and so romantic at first, but ultimately he shows how the career of a warrior is dehumanizing and becomes an almost touching anti-war story. Aaron, I'm almost crying.
We got to make it a movie.
It should be a movie.
It should be a movie, right?
Now, do you really have or did you have such an exciting and romantic life that turned into this anti-war story touching?
I don't feel like it was romantic.
No.
And I certainly, there was definitely excitement based on the nature of the work. I served in a unit called Duv Devan, which in Hebrew means cherries. It's a nickname for the unit. That this unit was created in 1986 in Israel as a response to the first Intifada in Israel. There was a monster Palestinian uprising. There was terrorism. Coffee shops started getting blown up, and so the Israeli Defense Forces, the current prime minister the prime minister at the time, who was the former chief of staff of the Israel Defense Forces, who was also the prime minister, Ehud Barak, created a unit of special operations commandos who would dress up as Palestinian locals for the purpose of being able to infiltrate the West Bank to kidnap terrorists to bring them back to Israel. And the reason for the unit was because of the tremendous psychological effect it would have on the psyche of Hamas. And so in 1988... there was an article that came out, and I just found it, and I framed it. I put it up on my wall, and I can't remember the title of the article, but it would translate it. It was something like, the Duv Devan undercover unit is something like, it was quick to pull the trigger, and Hamas is terrified. And so he ended up giving up the fact that there were undercover Israeli 21-year-olds running around dressed as Arabs, because he wanted the entire terror network to know that wherever you're not looking, we're standing.
Right. And, you know, it's funny because you're speaking, obviously, without an Israeli accent. A kid growing up...
I can put the accent. We can make it strong. It's
very
not a problem.
Good.
Yes.
Very good.
Farsi, too. I live in Los Angeles many years. We
but
can do the Persian.
You should be an actor. You know, I'll tell you something. You grew up... you're born in Montreal, a fellow Canadian. And then you grew up in Florida and California. You went to, what, Beverly Hills High?
Mm-hmm.
How do you end up in... the Duv Devan, the elite counter-terrorist unit, and how do you think as a young person, because you did it right from the start, it's not like you went later, your mind was thinking, this is what I have to do.
I was the son of a Hollywood, Oscar-winning screenwriter, Abby Mann. I grew up in Hollywood. I grew up with the kids at the studios.
The Trial of Nuremberg,
correct.
By the way.
He created Kojak. He did Ship of Fools. You know, he put one of those studios on the map with Kojak as far as money. You know, so he, I grew up in a very pro-Israel, a very liberal household, a very pro-Israel household. But I grew up as the son of Hollywood. And so I grew up with the kids of the agents, the sons of the actors. There's the sons of the studio chiefs, the mega agent, the brokers, and when you grow up, you know you're damaged goods in a way. You know we're all given $20 bills, but none of us are given love. We're all ignored, and half of them wound up in rehab, and the other half wound up on screen. You know, I went to school with Scott Kahn, James's son. You know, we played Little League together. Jimmy would show up on a Harley, with a stripper on the back of his bike, yelling at the umpire when Scott would strike out.
Like, nice.
So you know,
that's
a lot of pressure, by the way. So I grew up as a son of Hollywood in a very pro-Israel family, and you're not given a lot of love growing up, and so I was looking for something more. I was sick of LA, sick of Hollywood. Wound up, my stepfather was working on a project about an Israeli general at the time. He came to my house and he goes, "You should go to Israel." I was 17. "You should go to Israel. Go check it out. Go stay on the kibbutz." He could tell I was a little confused and discombobulated and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And what do you know when you're 18, 17? You don't know anything.
Not much.
Yeah, so I went to a kibbutz. I spent the summer there. Then I saw all these kids who were 19 years old running around in uniform, carrying weapons. And I went, you know what? This makes sense to me. These guys are all together collectively protecting this country. And I loved the realness of Israel. The fact that it's in your face. Nobody BSs. It's the antithesis of the BS you grew up in with Hollywood.
Yeah.
And so I ended up moving to Israel, and then, 6 years later, I moved back.
But I got to ask you, Aaron, you talk about, I got out of that Hollywood scene and everything, but you grew up with a lot of easy things around you. What you went to do, you went from one extreme to the other.
Mm-hmm.
When you read this book, you understand what was required of you to train.
For some reason, it made sense to me. I don't know if I had emotional intelligence early on or what it was, but I knew I needed to change.
You had motivation.
I had motivation. I wanted to do something that mattered. And at the time, that mattered. We weren't in the war with, you know, we hadn't been to Afghanistan. We hadn't been to Iraq. And to me, as a Jew growing up outside of Israel, it just made sense. Go figure out what Israel's all about. When I got there, I went, you know what? This clicks with me. It makes sense. The discipline will be good for me. And you know what? I love the physicality of it. I loved weapons and shooting guns and training. I ended up hating all of it at the end of it because it's a job and it's brutal and the training is brutal. And I highlight that in the book.
Yeah.
You go into a tier one unit, you're going to get crushed. The only thing you're thinking about is the next hour, and that's, you know, 15 months of the training before you're operational and licensed in mission. So it made sense to me intuitively. And so I went to Israel, moved there. I tried out for this unit, ended up, you know, going through the whole deal. And then, you know, 3 years later, I was out, came back to Israel and ended up living in Brad Pitt's house for a year and a half, working for another Israeli security company because I was the only commando with a U.S. passport.
Were you protecting Brad Pitt?
Yeah, I was living in his house in 98 after Athena Rolanda broke into his house, and I was working for an Israeli security company. And after a year of living in Brad Pitt's house, I go, you know what? Let me start my own security business. And I started a bodyguard company, and I protected everybody for 15, 16 years and then fried out on that. And then,
you know, before you fried out, apparently, and I've seen you quoted in a number of publications talking about the kind of money that's being made in protecting celebrities. When you talk about Kardashian,
that's right.
That level.
That's right.
I mean, it's crazy. Can you just drop a little bit of money? Because in our first segment, I know your eyes jumped out of your head when I talked about Gretchen Carlson settling for $20 million
on
the sexual harassment. I
mean, good for, you know, listen, I'm my mother was a strong woman. Good for Gretchen. Good for, you know what I mean? I still am involved with Fox, and they've been very good to me, and I'm fortunate. And, you know, I as far as the bill is regarding celebrities, I wasn't protecting the Kardashians at the time when they were robbed in Paris. I don't publicly speak about clients, so as to whether I'm working with her or not, I can't say. But I will say this. If I was protecting her at the time, she should have been spending anywhere in the neighborhood of $2 to $5 million a year. I think that when you're a Kardashian, when you're at that level of protection, I protected Kate Moss. I've worked with Pink. I lived in Brad Pitt's house. The Schwarzeneggers, I lived in Arnold's house for about a year, working shift security. You're looking at about $1 million a year to have somebody on your property 24/7. But the Kardashians needed the Israeli flavor, which is you got to get rid of these 500-pound Gucci's with the earpiece running around in the suit, and you got to go to like a professional security plan, which is plain-clothed guys who are sitting where you have no idea where they are.
You have no clue.
And, you know, GPS tracking devices on the vehicles, armed and properly trained, assets in foreign countries that can be armed. Their bodyguard wasn't even armed before when they were broken into.
Really?
So even if the guy had been in the hotel or in the apartment that they were renting, he wouldn't have been able to respond accordingly because those robbers had weapons. What are you going to do? So there's a black web of guys like me who served in Israel's intelligence unit who can coordinate to make sure that we have assets protecting celebrities. You're picking up about $1 million a year per guy on the estate, another $2 million for a team. And they're not going to be these idiots running around with earpieces, you know, with the feel good or sense of, but they're going to be killers who are watching you from a distance. And if you come near them, they're going to break distance.
I mean, we've all seen those guys with the earpieces that don't scare anyone.
It's great on the carpet, man. It's a layer of
whatever.
Stay away, but it's
big,
the real security is what you can't see. And
they may be big dudes, but that's not going to stop a bullet.
I sprinkle my guys into the paparazzi.
And are you still dealing with the Cherry's counter? Terrorism I know it was IMS Security Consultants.
Yes, well, my business, I changed the name of my company. I ended up developing a products line for law enforcement for terror readiness. I manufacture a deep concealment holster. I now manufacture products as well as dabble in the security consulting. But really what I'm doing now is I'm training military and police units around the world in the Israeli model. That's number one. Two, I have struggled my whole 17 years in the security business with how do I get my expertise to the average person, and how do I get all, you know, people who can't afford Kardashian level money. And so what I ended up coming out with is I ended up coming into a recording studio, and I recorded about 40 hours of Israeli grade security content that's delivered in an audio format for everybody who wants to learn the Israeli model, security companies, law enforcement. So I've now got about 10 courses online that you can download direct to your tablet.
Where is that online?
It's cherryscounterterror.com or
cherryscounterterror.com
or AaronCohenSecurity.com. And so I've now I can get to everybody. Okay, it's $200 to download it.
You know, I'm afraid to say this, Aaron, but we have to take a break because I don't want you to use any of your techniques on me, but we have to pay for the show. All right. We got a lot to talk about, stuff to talk about after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law. I'm talking to Aaron Cohn. We're right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervie and Kerry Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
Yeah, there we go, rising up. So I wish I had like 2 hours. Usually I want to get rid of my guests so fast. You know, I just had enough of them. But this one, I just want to
normally I
want to
leave.
No, thank you. Touche, man. That's like, it's like paparazzi. You know, I heard you are the top
guy. Two yids on the mic right now. There's no way, like, it's not going to get fierce.
But, I mean, you bring about touche, and we talk about paparazzi. I know you have no love for paparazzi, and you've developed some really cool techniques.
I have...
Umbrella?
Yeah, so
it's not a sexual move, is it?
You know, no, not yet. So I, working in the celebrity fold, you know, it's for me, it was the Israeli methodology and how do I protect, you know, clients. And you have to come up with clever ways to be able to deal with the fact that they have the right, you know, to be able to stand
absolutely
on public property and shoot us. And then I went, okay, well, then I have the right to put an umbrella, open it up and stick it in front of your lens with a 70-degree, you know, interference of your view. And I used to drive them nuts.
That's
one of the
nice
other things I would do is I would put my guys, my Israelis, and I'd mix them in with X-17 at the time, who was one of the ravaging, you know, paparazzi crews, and they're all Brazilian, and my Israelis look Brazilian, and so I would throw my guys into the paparazzis dressed as paparazzis, and the paparazzis couldn't figure out why the first three paparazzis were moving everybody backwards while shooting photos, and then I'd turn the cameras on the troublemakers, and then I could give it to LA County Sheriff's Threat Management Unit, and then I could get, you know, I could get restraining orders served as needed, and and so, you know, just about
that's
clever
great
ways to,
it
to
is
sort
clever
of protect, you know?
You know, it's interesting because I'm reading another review from Brotherhood of Warriors, Aaron Cohn's book. It says, a must read for every American, especially the politicians and the policymakers. This book makes more sense than anything I have yet to read concerning terrorism and how to counter terrorism. It is a must read. Tell me about it. Like, did you really think that people would be seeing this as a political book for how to, for politicians, how to address counterterrorism? Just like you just addressed paparazzi, you're addressing counterterrorism on behalf of politicians.
I never thought that this would be something that would turn into a political spectrum angle by any means whatsoever. I wrote the book because I wanted to be able to communicate the experiences that I had been through. I had no idea how to do that. I wrote 20 pages and sent it to an agent who I'd met somewhere in Hollywood, you know, 15 or 17 years ago, and to ICM in New York. And he read it and he goes, this is incredible. This is a book writer. I was just trying to sell and promote my company. And I, you know, intuitively, I was like, let's get content out there so that people can see who I am. So I'm not just some Israeli schmuck taking out a full page ad in Variety, trying to like get my face shown, but
you were never an Israeli schmuck,
no,
at least in the business. Because when you did Haywire, Steven Soderbergh actually recognized
yes
what you could do to help the film.
So his producer at the time, so 2011. This is interesting. His producer had read my book. They were looking for a special operations expert to consult on a film called Haywire, which starred Gina Carano and Channing Tatum and Michael Fassbender. And they called me up and they said, hey, can you consult on this thing? We saw your book. It looked awesome. We're reading it now. Would you mind coming over to the house? And that turned into like a seven-month run
right
on this film. And then I started acting. And then Steven put me in the movie. So I ended up training all the actors. So to tie this all together, had no idea what the book would do. And then, you know, you're creating opportunities. And the next thing you know, this big director reads it, call me in for this film, end up training the actors, end up consulting on the movie Spain, Ireland. And he said to me, by the way, you're playing this character. Grabbed the acting coach who was on set for Gina, locked him in my hotel room for 20 hours to make sure I knew what I was doing. And I'm five movies in now, including the up-and-coming Rambo.
Which we want to talk about right now. That was a great segue, like, because now you're an actor. So, you know, we talked about everything you've done. You've done more in one lifetime than most people have done in 10 lifetimes.
I'm just getting warmed up.
You're just getting warmed
up.
Tell us about Rambo 5. Sylvester Stallone's 72 years old, you know, making, I think this is the last one. It's rumored to be called Last Blood.
Last Blood.
Tell us about
it. So, I read for the film, ended up getting picked up by, this is my second movie with Millennium. I had just done a movie prior to that called 211 with Nicolas Cage, which is on Netflix, co-starred in that film, and have a great scene with Cage. I'm toe-to-toe with this Oscar winner for three pages, and then boom, Improvville. And to this day, I'm still cool with him and his son. And
not everyone is. But
well,
go ahead.
I loved him. He was great. I mean, like, it's a different level of acting. And then I ended up reading for the final Rambo. They called me and they said, hey, there's this role for this police state captain. It's the whole opening sequence. And we're going to reveal John Rambo again, you know, at 72, living on a ranch in Arizona. And there's this monster monsoon. And I have a scene with Sly in character playing John Rambo. Like, what more could you ask for?
Have you shot it?
Yeah, we shot it in Bulgaria. We just wrapped it. I was out there for about 6 weeks. And when I'm out on set and I'm acting in a movie, I will lend my tactical services to the actors as well. So I ended up training the local Bulgarian stunt guys as well so that they looked American and tactical and proficient. And
they were all the extras there?
Yeah. And it was just, so this was all. And then, so when I showed up on set, Sly didn't know that I was an American. He thought I may have been a Bulgarian actor that was casted.
Did you put on your Bulgarian accent?
I didn't put on my Bulgarian accent, but I ended up throwing my lines with Sly. And then Sly, this is the coolest part. I walked up to him before we started shooting and I go, hey, do you want to run this? Because, you know, why not?
Yeah.
You know, like, just get in there. Just who cares? Just go.
Right.
And he goes, yeah, I'd love to, man. And we were like off on the side throwing our lines. It was incredible.
Wow.
And getting it all dialed in and tuned up. And the next thing I know, we shot our scenes. And then he goes, so you're the tech advisor. I go, yeah, I'm going to be training the actors. You're cool, man, cool.
Really?
Well, let me know if, hang around. And so we ended up hanging out. We bromanced for like the next 6 weeks. Hard.
Nice.
He was awesome. And getting to act with Sly, if I never do another movie again, that was one of the most amazing experiences in the world. Because he is such a master of camera and of acting, and he's writing and changing lines as we're moving. He's going in and out of a trailer, tightening, and he's sculpting. He is a movie-making animal, and I'm so grateful. And that's the biggest takeaway from Israel and being in this unit. Be grateful, but be aggressive and go. Take what you want. No one's going to set it up.
You know, that movie will be coming out in the fall of 2019.
In 2019, the fall,
right,
yeah.
So it's something to look forward to. I think it's going to be huge.
I'm so excited. It's going to feel a lot like the first one, which is awesome. So.
And I think people really have a thirst for it right now because they know how long is Sly going to be able to do this. Probably not too much longer.
He's so incredible.
And so incredible. So what's we only have a minute or two. Tell us about Aaron Cohn coming out. What are we going to look for? You got so much going on.
Yeah.
What can we look for in Aaron?
So we got
Aaron
Rambo.
Cohn.
We got Rambo in the fall of 19. But I just released a 40-hour 10-course. Israeli security training platform, digital, online, downloadable. If you're law enforcement, if you're in the security business, if you're a school and you're looking to figure out how to protect your school, but you don't have a budget, I have a mastering school security program. I've taken everything I know, stuffed it into 40 hours of downloadable audio content. And for $200, you can start learning what we know in Israel. AaronCohnSecurity.com.
AaronCohnSecurity.com. Boom. No, it's not the boom. Aaron, you know, you are a joy. You need to have your own show. I don't know what you're doing on my show.
I'm going to start muscling your producer into free airtime.
You're better than I am.
She thinks she's going to take me down on this one, but let me tell you.
Thank you for coming today, Aaron. Good luck with all
thank
of the projects.
So much, brother. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Thanks for listening to Gurvy's Law. What a great show today. We'll be back next week. Have a great week.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn.